Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show.
Hi, Doug.
We are still professional, Joe.
Yes,
we still
are.
Have our phones
Mine's
on
muted.
Full blast. Yours was muted. Mine got
we
me that time.
We take turns doing that.
We do. But we're glad that you're with us. Excited for another beautiful Thursday here in Youngstown. The sun was out. That beautiful thing you brought back from Florida, some warmth.
It's hanging tight.
It melted all the snow. I'm ready for spring. I'm ready for the flowers to come up and to cut my grass and all of that. The nice thing that the snow did is it hid all the stuff that I didn't get around to in the fall. And now that it's all melted, I'm like, oh my goodness.
There?
It's still there.
Oh,
it was underneath the snow the whole time. But how is it being back in the saddle, back in the swing of things?
Good. Yeah. Felt right back in. It was great.
Good. Well, you know, this is the show where we try and help you become the best version of yourself. We talk all things life, leadership, and what's going on, sometimes in the world. So, I don't know if you heard this, but Ohio, according to Governor DeWine, is going back to sporting events and indoor
concerts. Oh, seriously? I did not hear
stuff.
This.
It's at a certain percentage of whatever, around 30 or 50% or something like that. Indoor and outdoor have different...
Sweet. That's a good
but,
sign.
But, yeah, it is a very good sign. And vaccinations are on the rise. What's your take on that, the vaccines? I know some people are like, they're putting a secret microchip in me and, you know, the vaccines are terrible.
Well, philosophy forever, and it's even with regular flu vaccines. I think, mm-hmm. you know, those kind of tools have inherent risks to them, and they should be reserved for people that have potential risks of having them.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
That's where you take... I don't think it's a tool. I'm a guy that doesn't like taking Tylenol because your body doesn't need it as a natural defense against mm-hmm. headaches, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that... But I have a little bit more responsibility on my end where I have to eat right and I have to sleep right and I have to do all the things right so my body can do what it was intended to do.
Exactly, yeah. No, I just think it's for those that are in that at-risk category and stuff like that.
For sure.
Especially with some of the stuff that's coming out, the efficacy rates and all that stuff, it seems like, I'm no doctor, but it seems like you should probably line up and go get the vaccine in that case. But for those of you that are younger and in that spot, I know some people are like, well, we can't go back to normal until we have, you know, herd immunity or whatever, but I just got my blood work back and I have the antibodies. Apparently you just need like 0.8 in your blood or whatever.
It's can
like
I have some of yours? I mean, can
high.
I just eat, can I put some in my coffee or something? I don't know how that
I don't
works.
Know. But
that's
they say actually that people with the antibodies, their blood donations are in demand, that they want to have those, I guess, to give to people.
Okay.
I don't know if you can pass them that way, but mine was 6.8, so it's like off the charts. 0.8 is like high, 6.8. So
well,
I have,
good job. You're an
I have
overachiever.
Lots of COVID antibodies. And so I feel pretty safe in that. But I also found out I wasn't pregnant.
Yes, that's
so,
great.
Which is exciting.
We would have a different show if had you been pregnant.
Would.
Yeah,
we would. It's interesting. I was having this conversation with my mom. My mom's over 60, whether or not, you know, what she thought about the vaccines and stuff like that. And it's just fascinating to watch people process through information, and it's not even information, it's processing through the lens and the distortion and then the information, and that's kind of where I want to go, because I feel like so much in our world, socially, politically, spiritually, all of that is warped in how it's seen. So it's the mechanism is delivered to you one way, so you get to see, and people view the vaccines through this lens, right? Mm-hmm. So I view everything through this set of principles, philosophy, but it's also being presented to you through a filter. You're getting it through news media that have a certain slant that they want to put on things. You're getting it through politicians that have it's, you know, advantageous if people do or don't take the vaccine. And I know nobody would ever do that politically, but in the world that we're in, everything is that way. And then you have your own social community that kind of views it a certain way, and even a religious community. And so, you know, even we can take it out of the vaccine sense, but I know that's been a large talking point right now. They're trying to pump out, you know, all these shots and everything. But it's so tough when you have to go through four filters to get to the truth.
Yeah.
And I find that to be true politically. I find that to be true spiritually even. You know, there are people that come to church and they've got to go through four filters because they had a childhood that did this to them spiritually. They have the perception, modern media, YouTube has told them this. They're personal circles have said this, their friends don't go to church or do go to church and they go to crazy church or whatever.
Right.
And then for them to, they have to sort through all that just to listen to the actual message and be in the actual room, you know, whether it's a Bridge of Hope or somewhere else. I want to talk about that simply because we live in a world where everything is marketed to us with a slant. And how do we see the truth through all the distortion?
Okay, so now the first question is...
Because you're a marketing guy. So
oh, yeah, yeah, right. And honestly, should it be easy, right? Should dissemination of information, truthful information, be easy? So for instance, like if you look at it through from this perspective, education right now is really... not regarded very high,
right?
Because it's free, it's accessible, and it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. But when you used to put education where you hid it in the back of a temple somewhere and nobody can get it except for the elite, people would give their lives to try to get education. Wow. You make it a little bit harder and people are willing to walk over bigger obstacles to be able to get to it. So in my world, you know, it applies uniformly to everybody. It's hard for everybody. Mm-hmm. So the people that try a little bit harder could just be like 1% further ahead than everyone else.
Now, I know this never happens with us, but that illustration just gave me makes me think of a scripture.
No, I am super shocked. Let's see.
So there's a scripture that says that it's the Lord's glory or God's glory to conceal a matter and our glory to seek it out. And
makes
that
sense.
Kind of concept where if I keep something hidden, you'll pursue it.
Yeah, right.
Where if I just make it accessible. And so that that lends itself to a whole interesting conversation that we could have. But so with that, there's so much information that we're being given. Are you saying that we shouldn't take everything at face value, that we need to peel back the layers of the onion?
Or the insistence that in order to make stuff more accessible to people, to make it easier, is probably not the right path. I mean, it doesn't solve the problem. Making it harder is probably exactly the reason why people will be more motivated to pursue whatever it is. So proper marketing...
That's so interesting.
Proper marketing would be not to outline it and say, hey, let's have a slippier slope right to you, right? Let's highlight the advantages of now pursuing something that is harder to reach.
So correct me if I'm wrong. So what you're saying is you don't want to sell to everyone.
What?
So you don't want to sell to everyone.
I don't. No. I want to be exclusive, and that exclusivity makes whatever I have more valuable.
More valuable.
The information, truthful information is more valuable when it's harder to get.
Mm. This is so good. So I've found a couple of podcasts, and I've had them for a little bit, but it's so interesting. I'm a Ben Shapiro listener. It's one of the spots where I tend to get my news because I feel like he's honest about his positions. I feel like, you know, if he has a slant on it, he tells you in advance, and then he tells you the facts, and then he tells you his opinions on those facts, and it makes it easier for me to chew the meat and spit out the bones and arrive at maybe a truthful conclusion. Even if I don't agree with him on everything, I feel like I'm at least getting the information without filter. And one of the things recently with all the crackdown with cancel culture and I don't know if you've seen this, but the lead actress, Gina Carano on The Mandalorian was canceled by Disney.
I saw that.
Super stupid. So she comes and Ben Shapiro reaches out and now she's doing a movie with The Daily Wire, producing it, acting in it, all that sort of stuff. And just was basically like, fine, you don't want me at your table. I'm coming over here to this table. So she was on the Sunday special this week and it was a really good interview. But I say all that to say this, I never wanted to subscribe to Daily Wire before. I was kind of like, well, I can get his 45-minute free podcast that gives me the highlights. But I know they offer a whole bunch more stuff on their website. But since they've been like cracking down and, you know, throttling back YouTube videos and all the algorithm stuff, I'm not saying YouTube has to change anything or Facebook, but it makes me want to subscribe because I'm like, that's so like I want to support that stuff. And it's almost in the concept of what you're saying. Like you say to Ben Shapiro, why don't you give your stuff away for free? Well, I make it exclusive. You have to pay a fee to be a part of that. Well, I want to be in the club, you know,
that's right.
You kind of have that.
And that's what it does. But the heart that we have, if we decided to say, hey, let's just give everybody money. Right. And we think that making it money more available to people solves the problems and you're going to be sorely disappointed.
Ask when all the people that won the lottery, right?
Yeah. Right. You're going to be sorely disappointed because after that, somebody's going to eat once, right? But they're going to be right back in front of you saying, I need that again, over and over.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. So in the world that we're in, where we're having to go through multiple layers to get to the truth, you're saying that it may not be a bad thing.
Absolutely. It'll make people try harder. And it'll add value to the things that exist. And I tell you that, you know, like the Ben Shapiro stuff, the people that are truly, and not necessarily objective, but you can tell where they're at. There's a new value for that. How many people are you going to seek out that are non-spinners and marketers because you don't like to be bullshitted anymore?
Yep. No, absolutely true. And I think the era of mainstream media, traditional advertising, marketing, all of that stuff has so gone by the wayside with the takeover of the internet, apps, phones, even the audio stuff on Alexa and some of the other stuff. It's such a fascinating world that we're stepping into because you no longer, the marketing that tries to find you and make it easy for you to buy, you're skeptical of.
Right.
But the stuff that you go and seek out, you look at all the reviews and you read what this person thinks and that person thinks, who you've never met.
Right.
But you value their opinion more than the professional who's, you know, slick marketing, or the actor or actress that's trying to sell you this deodorant or whatever. You're going with the, you know, 2,000 peer reviews on Amazon rather than, well, you know, Shaq told me to buy this pizza, you know, or whatever. Right. And it's not that Shaq's a bad guy, but at the end of the day, we're shifting, we're outsourcing that stuff. And do you think that's a good thing?
Yeah, because your level of approach goes through the roof. Your standards go through the roof. It's not like you're sitting there waiting for it to be delivered to you. You got to go out there and hunt a little bit. Mm.
Any downfalls to that?
Yeah, I mean, it does create a bigger separation than you have right now, because, you know, there are going to be people that aren't necessarily, or sort of like in those middle people, they get lost to the bottom of it when this happens. You get people who already had a hard time getting to information, makes it even more difficult because now there becomes a greater separation.
Yeah.
But you're one step closer to the pendulum swinging back the other way, which brings it back into balance again.
Because I almost feel like when we look at our sources of information, and everybody has an opinion today, mainstream media, whatever. Some of that stuff, particularly in the mainstream media, feels to me almost like if you've ever seen The Hunger Games.
Yes.
And just how produced it is. Now, I know obviously it's over the top and they're selling a you know, a perspective on that, and they're doing hyperbole in The Hunger Games to pull you into that. But you know, as all the people are, you know, happy and clapping and the cameras are rolling and it's all produced. And there's just this element that people are looking for of raw and authentic. And you're saying this is just going to create a greater hunger for that, and people are going to be willing to dig
for it. Yeah, if we can get it to, if we can make sure that it doesn't swing to the point where there's danger and injury. Like if we don't, let's just say like in the synagogues and the temples is where all of the information was. And so in order to get information, you had to do something. Well, what if they didn't like so many people doing it and they moved it even further away reach where it was impossible to get information? That's where the danger would be. Yeah. Now nobody's informed and only three people have everything.
Yeah. I mean, historically, you can see those events that take place. You know, I think of the invention of the printing press, Johann Gutenberg in the 1500s, that gave birth to the Protestant Reformation, the Enlightenment, so many huge movements in history that shifted all of the way we think today, started back there because he printed, and then all of a sudden the Bible wasn't just in Latin, it got translated into German and then English, and all of a sudden, you know, Joe Smith down the road doesn't have to go to his priest anymore, he can read it for himself, and people went, hold on a second. You know what this says? And they're like, well, yeah, but you weren't supposed to know that. And things were concealed. And so, yeah. And then you had, you know, for printing the Bible in English, for instance, William Tyndale was burned at the stake for translating the Bible into English. It was considered a sacrilege to put it into the commoner's language, to give that power to the people.
Well, and that's the thing, like you watched it go out like this where it was available to everybody, and then everybody treated it like everybody would treat everything else. And then it gets back reformed and
Well, it's so fascinating because now, I mean, in America particularly, the Bible is the number one sold book. It's readily available. You can have it in 19 or 20 different, probably more than that, English translations. Everybody can have it. Everybody has one and nobody reads it. And it's a really fascinating dichotomy where if you go to China, for instance, where certain religious texts are completely outlawed, like the scriptures, you know, you hear of people that, you know, memorize whole books or get like one page and they commit it to memory because that's all they have. And they're so hungry for it. There's videos on YouTube and elsewhere of, you know, the underground church receiving Bibles and people are crying and taking them in. And I'm like, man, in America, like, you know, you've got 12 on your bookshelf over there.
Right.
And they're covered in dust.
We had this conversation with my 11 year old. And I said, I want you to get in your brain right now. We have a big pallet of, you know, bottled water. And when you have a big pallet of bottled water, you have some that are wasted, you dump it out, half right. drunk and whatever. But you get down to it and you've got like three and it's got to last you for 10 days. And you are basically taking every droplet out of there and yeah. like you're really valuing it super high because now it feels limited and you're not going to have any more after that. And it's just part of our psyche. No matter where we're at, when it's readily available, we totally cast it off as not valuable.
Yeah. And it, you know, when we talk about that in terms of whether it's relationships or, sometimes we pursue things that we don't have, or we desire things that we see other people have because we don't have them. And then we get them and we're like, oh, that wasn't that good anyway.
Right.
We've had
this discussion like 15 times in 100 different flavors. 100 I love different it. Ways.
Yeah. Love it. But it's just true. Cause we end up desiring stuff that we don't have. Then we get it and we're like, well, did I really want that? You know, you think of people that, you know, my whole life, I just wanted to do this. And then they get on top of that mountain, they own their own company, they make so much money, whatever it is, and then they realize it's empty.
Yep.
That it was never the stuff that they wanted in the first place. So for the average listener that's sitting there and going, all right, what does this have to do for me? I think it'd be interesting to hear from some people, what's the stuff that you're hungry for that you feel like you don't have access to? Because you're saying that that's where the gold is, so to speak, because, you know, that when we conceal certain things or when certain things are difficult to get to, we're willing to go to crazy lengths to get them. But then as soon as they're readily available, it's like, ah, whatever, I can have that tomorrow. It makes me think of the Lord's Prayer where it says, give us this day our daily bread. And I often say no Americans really ever had to pray that. Even the poorest of the poor amongst us have the ability to get food stamps and handouts and all that stuff. You know, we're blessed to live in the land that we live in, but we have no concept of what it is to pray for daily bread. Like exactly. I go to my cupboard and I have
it's there enough for
a month right. or more. And so you're not worried about that, but you go to some place, you know, in Africa or India or, you know, someplace like that, and you can go into some pretty remote places where if it doesn't rain and the crops don't come up, they're praying for their daily bread.
Yeah.
When the high priest would go into the Holy of Holies once a year, he'd pray for two things. He'd pray for pregnant women and the next generation kind of deal, but he would also pray for the rains because Israel's you know, dependent upon the rains for the crops. And so if they didn't get rain, they didn't have crops. And so, you know, you'd think like on the holiest day, the most spiritual prayer you could pray. And every time he would go in, God, you have to send the rain or we don't eat. And you pray differently. Right. You plan differently.
So here's a sort of like a practical today type of thing. And it's current event. So this will be a little its own little discussion here. You know about the Robin Hood stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, one of the big things, like when you start trading stocks, is that, you know, as a stock trader, you don't have the same information stream that the people who are trading over there do. You're a little slower. You're hours mm-hmm. behind them or days behind them. So they're making decisions and you watch the decisions happen. And then a day later, you're acting on them. You're like, this isn't fair. Why do they get the information and I don't? So here's what happens. Mm-hmm. If they've got these little groups that could circulate information and conspire, right? And they were like going like this to you. Now Reddit and a bunch of people
GameStop,
said,
what?
And they said, hey, we're going to do the same stuff. Yeah. We're going to have information and we're going to cover it among us ourselves, and we're going to do things before you're ready for them, and now you're going to lose a bunch of money because we did it.
A ton of money.
So that's the great equalizer between the two, because everybody can play that same game. You see it in politics. One party will change the rules, and they're not like considering that the next party that comes in there are going to use those same freaking rules.
Exactly.
So that's the equalizer, is the whatever you do is going to be played against you. I'm sure there's a scripture about that somewhere, right?
Yeah, I'm sure there is. No, that's good. So how do we in our lives, knowing that the good stuff is hidden, knowing that there is layers of the onion to peel back, knowing that information that comes to us shouldn't be taken at face value, that there's a certain joy in the searching, right? Everybody wants to get to the destination, but it's really the journey that is what we're looking forward to. How do we learn to enjoy that? How do we learn to enjoy the seeking rather than the finding?
Well, you're taking a little bit of joy in that you came across the Ben Shapiro article and it's as pure as you want it to be. And it's really hard to find that. So you take enjoyment, not necessarily because now you take that and pound it over everybody's head with you found truth and they didn't. For you, I mean, I have great solace in being able to take the voids that nobody's paying attention to. Mm-hmm. And I just get to sit back and know, like I get to predicate things on things I know that even if I explained to him, you couldn't see the same things that I saw. So taking the enjoyment of just having a more connected sort of like perspective with the world around you. That's really all you can take from it.
Well, for those people though that are watching, like I just hand it to me. Just tell me. Some people don't have that adventurous, that curiosity to them. They're not going to seek it out. Like that's just too much time. I got more important things to do. Whatever it is, whether it's politics, relationship, whatever. Those things go on the back burner, and they kind of live in a space where they take what's in front of them and they take it at face value. How do you stir the curiosity in your spirit and your inside of you? How do you get? Maybe you're not that adventurous, but what's something somebody can do that? Hey, I'm looking for adventure. I want to be more adventurous. What could they try?
We see a lot of people that just aren't observant because everything's too loud in their world. Mm. They're so much paying attention to things. You look about most of it, like you look at the mainstream media, right? Mm-hmm. And I look at them as they're just like a buoy in the ocean, right? They don't have an attention span. They're going to go with whatever flow. They're not going to advocate for 30 days. So if I could just hang tight and stick with whatever, they're going to forget that they were on the opposing side of me at a certain point. And so
just depends on who's in office.
What that helps you do is that lowers the volume on those other things. So you can observe things that you didn't see before. Because if you can just get those things low enough, you can start seeing things like, in astronomy. A lot of times they are building pictures based on what they don't see versus what they are. There's parts of the universe or parts of the galaxy that are so dark that they can't see anything. So they have to extrapolate what's there based on what they don't see instead of what they do see. You got to be really quiet and really dark in order to flip that over, because there's a lot more less lack of information than there is information.
Well, it's almost like when you want to go out stargazing, you can't do that in the city where there's all the lights. You got
to
go
out.
That's
exactly what I'm talking about. It has to be dark enough for you to be able to pick out what you couldn't see before.
Interesting. So your little withdrawal down to Florida, those getaways for you are those kind of moments. So I'm tuning everything else out, and I'm gonna really hone in on what's in front of me and just observing and let those things come.
On the other side of a fast, the first meal that you have, it really affects you, right? Because it's all of a sudden like super bright. So when I came back to information, I didn't just start consuming it at the same rate that I did before. Mm. It was like little nibbles because it was freaking overwhelming, but you didn't notice it when you were immersed in it, but it was loud. Right.
No, that totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. So for people who are going to peel back the layer of the onion, let's talk in terms of truth. So as a person, you believe, I'm going to go find out something about Joe right now, in objective truth.
So what you're saying,
you are obviously a person that there are objective truths, mm-hmm. but we may disagree on what to do with it.
Oh yeah.
But at the end of the day, there are a set of facts that can't be altered. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And scrutiny is the only thing that does that. And even if it's my idea, I've already self-scrutinized before I bring it up to anybody, mm-hmm. right? I take it from third-party perspective, my biggest critic. I poke holes in it, see if it survives. If it doesn't survive, it wasn't true, and I'm not interested in it. A lot of people fall in love with their ideas before it's been scrutinized, so
I'm sure you've had a couple of those business pitches.
Yeah. And so that's really the only thing. You got to fall out of love with that. And are we talking about mine or are we talking about yours?
I was going to say in the sense that we live in a very pluralistic society where your truth is your truth and my truth is my truth. But then there's the truth. And it seems like today, kind of like you were talking about, like somebody comes in with a business pitch and they're going to say to you, I have this idea, but they're not seeing they're seeing their truth as they really love this idea, but they're not seeing the truth that it's a bad idea.
Yeah. So here's what you do. And this is the astronomy deal where you really have to take the negative, like the things that you're not going to say and get your information from what you can't see or they won't say. So you got to flip it and say, let me think of a good example. Go on to your next question. I'm going to think of something.
Yeah. So when we're in, that kind of arena and we're hunting for truth, I don't think there's a person out there that's like, I'd like to be lied to. We like our version of events. We like our version of truth. We like that we like our idea. But objectively, your idea may not be able to make any money. Your idea may actually be really, really bad for you. It may be really bad for your marriage. And so you might like the idea, but being willing to go beyond that and to objectively see and evaluate and audit and be able to be in a position where it's not just an opinion, but it's ultimately, you know what? That's the truth. I know this is how I see it, and I'd really like this to be true.
But there's your key, though. So the way that you get into that negative side is that the stuff that doesn't benefit you, are you still in love with it if it's not on the beneficial side? So you take someone and say, I like this idea because I'm going to put a lot of money in my pocket. And you're like, how about this idea? And what if it takes all the money out of your pocket? Do you still like it? That's the negative side. We're like, okay, Well, maybe I don't like as much because I'm not a beneficiary of that idea anymore.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of folks, though, when we talk in terms of politics or spirituality, those deep truths, they're multi-layered. And so how do we peel back the subjective layers, and how do we peel back the filters so that we can arrive at the truth? Because one of your things that you said often on the show and in life is, you know, you've come to faith from a very objective, experimental, scientific, it wasn't an emotional, wasn't something you wanted to be true, but ultimately through a series of questions and difficult conversations with yourself and fact-finding missions and all that sort of stuff, you've arrived at this conclusion. And how do people do that, whether it's with politics, whether it's with a policy position, spirituality, any of those things? I think the principles and the process is pretty similar.
Yeah.
So you mentioned scrutiny earlier, but obviously it's more than just scrutinizing.
We do such a good job at like justifying and kind of rationalizing, and we build these layers that you're talking about where you don't even know where the truth is. It's built on, I mean, you might be some truth down below, but there's a whole lot of stuff that you want to be true that gets you between now and then. And I'll tell you, like the simple principles are where you have to stay. And you know, like we'll use an easy one. Like you could start with every life is precious. Like we already know that every life is precious. Life is very valuable because it's hard to have, right? If it's plentiful, then we don't value it, and then we just kill people. And we think, okay, well, life is precious, but what if he committed a crime? Or what if he's not, what if the kid is ill-timed or whatever? And then we've got these rationalizations like, hey, guess what? The principle is it a life? Yes, no. If it's a life, then it's precious, and it doesn't matter the reason that you've built on top of it, it's still a life.
Yeah. And
not to start with
start with the easy one, Joe. Let's solve the world's problems today. But I think it's tough, particularly in the political camps today, right? You have two people on opposite sides of the issues. They look at the other person as being abhorrent or morally evil, and maybe not in a local sense, but in a very Facebook sense, where I don't need to know your name or story or any of that stuff. I just know you believe that, and I believe this, and you're obviously wicked and evil, and you're obviously wicked and evil. And you start in these two spaces, and then you each have layers of things that you've put of the onion on top of the facts, whether that's personal experience, whether that's a religious position, whatever it is, and you've layered these things, and the truth gets clouded. And then there aren't answers. Everybody's just
I'm going to take an entire industry and throw them under the bus right now. And I want to know if in scripture that anybody's done this, because I want some backing here. Attorneys, lawyers, right?
Yeah.
The people who take things that might be true and give a marketing approach to concealing what really was. Like when you listen to, you listen to a House of Representatives, I'll call them sermons because that's all they do. I mean, they sit there and
pontificate.
If you didn't have an end and you just listened to it, you could agree with both sides because they're really good at what they do. And so if you're just looking for truth, that is not the place that you want to go to find it. Right?
That's true. I don't think you're going to find a scripture against attorneys. I mean, the first five books are called the Torah, they're called the law.
All right. So, okay.
And most of Jesus' arguments were with scribes and lawyers, with people that knew, and they would come and try and give him a tough question to trip him up. So, that's as old as the book. So I don't think we're going to get away necessarily from the idea of lawyers, but the way Jesus always won those conversations was bringing them back to the truth.
The principles.
And the principles, exactly, the baseline. And I think for our culture and our society, do we have a universal set of principles that people agree on in this country.
Not at all. We've gone a and long way from that. Is it all everything that we talk about on here is because we have a complete disconnection from what those principles. We can't agree. We can sit down with 100 different people and say, okay, what are the universal laws, the basic principles that everybody should follow, right? And everyone is going to disagree different. What they're going to have, what's on that list.
And then you and I would say, that's why our founders gave us a constitution.
Made it simple.
Made it simple and said, here's the Bill of Rights, these 10. These are going to be the universal principles that we all function on. But then you have people that disagree on how to interpret those. And then you have, again, layers of Supreme Court decisions, laws. You have history. You have all kinds of stuff that continue to go over top of the actual facts. And it seems like when politicians or pundits, whoever, even, you know, just regular old Facebook conversations, everybody has an opinion of the person that's like, well, just deal with the text. And then you get into the nuance and the grammar people come out and say, well, actually it means, and then you have other people who are like, well, let me quote this case to you. And everybody has an angle for why their version is right. And I'm just wondering, are we ever going to get to the spot where we go, well, that's the truth?
Well, here, I'm going to give you a little Joe's insight here, because I've noticed this phenomenon over and over and over again. And it was my search through, theology that kind of brought this to light. The principles, right? They don't give a shit about your opinion about them. Mm-hmm. You can build all that stuff on them, and you give it enough time, that stuff shakes off, and the principle's still there. No matter what dressing you put on it, it always shakes off what shouldn't be. So if you think, all right, well, somebody, you know, changed an article in the Constitution. Well, guess what happens, like, 10 years from now, is it shakes itself off, and now we're back to the truth again. Because you can't, no matter, in a short term, you can conceal it. Long term, it breaks out.
Yeah, so you're saying eventually true north is found.
Absolutely. Eventually. 100% of the time.
Yeah.
I tried to not come to conclusions, right? I tried.
Yeah.
And if I was still brought back to a truth, it means that in spite of what I was doing, it still revealed itself.
What was your biggest hang up in your faith journey? Because you came to it very skeptically and very experimentally, and I'm sure that's still your journey. You're still asking questions when we sit down and talk about stuff. What was, you know, early on, what were some of your hangups in going, all right, you know, this is probably true, or what was the principle?
Let me give you the more petty ones, because they, you know, I'm a science details guy.
Yeah.
And you can get to Genesis and start disagreeing with sentences in there, like, because I had a good agreement with what time was, right?
Yeah, sure.
And how long people lived, and, you know, really factual things about physics in the world. And they disagreed with what I was reading in this book. And I was ready to cast it off and say, this doesn't make any sense. Yeah. It's not truthful. It's just somebody's imagination, right? Uh-huh. And then I started getting into physics and time compressions. And I was like, oh, you know what? Maybe there's a little bit more to this. Maybe it was me who was ignorant rather than what I was reading. And it started stretching my understanding of things, because I was so sure of myself, right? And that's what was getting in my way.
You know, there's a scripture.
Oh, let's do it.
In Psalms, I think it's Psalm 14:1. It says, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. And I often make this when I sit down with folks that are like, oh, I don't believe in God or whatever. I often say that's the greatest declaration of faith you could ever make. You know, you don't have faith in God, or you don't have faith in that. You know, ultimately, it's a position of belief. And I love that the Bible makes that clear. Because people always want to say, well, I've come to the logical conclusion. And most of the time, they're hiding their decision of faith behind some sort of thwarted logic or a cute tweet they saw that, you know, explains atheism in a, you know, a snap. You know, truthfully, when you get into it, when you look at the history of science, and I know you love history, all of the early scientists, a lot of them were Christians trying to either prove or disprove the scriptures.
Right.
And thank God that, you know, we know the way the physics works and all that stuff. And those guys came out of this appreciation of God's creation, and that drove them deeper and deeper into science. Do you find a greater love for science and for nature and stuff like that?
Yeah. And I've had the most interesting arguments and disagreements with Christians about, you know, what one of the, and I don't know the scripture about this, but I'll give give you the my version of it, is that, you know, God speaks to you in whatever language that you understand, right? And to me, that before it was like the language, right? But it wasn't the language. I'm thinking like my understanding became of it that there's you know, 300 million people in this country, and each one of them has a purpose that's different from my own, hearing a different set of everything different from my own with a different set of purpose than my own, right? And so the atheist guy, he's part of the purpose, even if he doesn't know it. And I was like, oh my goodness.
That's good. That'll
preach. So he doesn't have to be part of, or like part of it, like a willing participant to be a part of it. It was just great.
You know, I had a professor at Bible college that one of the figures in scripture, and however you want to interpret this, is the Antichrist. And some people have a very, you know, revelation kind of opinion of a very actual person. Some people say it's kind of an idea. But he said this in one of the classes, that even the Antichrist has to find his identity in Christ, even though he's the complete antichrist.
It's in his name. He has to. He needs him.
Exactly.
And you know, here's true. One thing. And let me get reveal this about you. And I've come in contact with a lot of, you know, spiritual leaders, right? Mm-hmm. And you are the first that has ever like yearned for something that you didn't have an understanding for. Like, I don't trust people who haven't figured out. I really don't.
I say all the time, if I have all the answers, you're in a cult, please run. There has to be somebody higher than me.
That is the objective that I'm looking for in people, that if you can find someone, like, it would benefit you from saying that you have the answers, because then people will just come for the answers. Yeah. It doesn't benefit you saying that sometimes I don't know, because there's going to be some people like, oh, he doesn't know, we're all screwed, right?
I hope not. but that's true. There's a comfort in, you know, it's kind of like when you have a little kid, they think that, you know, if I just have mommy or daddy, like, there's certain things I can't fix. There's certain things I can't protect you from. But my kids still believe that, well, as long as dad's here, we're safe. They'll fall asleep. You know, they can think there's, you know, a giant monster in their room, and I got news for them. Like, you know, I have a gun, I could shoot them, but that monster may kill me. Like, I'm not all powerful, but they have, like, kids have that belief. And I feel like a lot of times when people come to faith, or they start coming to church and they're exploring that side of things, they want somebody that feels like they're going to make all the monsters go away and have all the answers. Right. And I'm very quick to tell people, like, I can't do that, but I know the one who does, and I'm not sure why he does some of the stuff that he does. But if you want to pursue him together, I'll be, you know, one beggar telling another beggar where I found some bread.
Right.
And we can go on that journey together.
Yeah. And I know that some of the stuff that, you know, comes out of my noise hole doesn't jive with your, you know, your theology training, and there's you don't even try to say anything about it. You just like absorb it and you move on. And I'm thinking, I have so much respect for that restraint alone.
It's not necessarily restraint. I would credit my dad. My dad would, to no end, just try and, if I came and I was like, I have this figured out, I remember coming back from Bible college as a freshman and sophomore, and I'd be like, I heard this new, you know, take on this passage of scripture, or some new theology that, well, it was new to me, been around for hundreds of years, right, or thousands of years, but I had just discovered it, Joe, and I was going to make it. Yes. And I would come home and I would spout all the things I learned and pontificate. And my dad may have agreed with it, but he would to no end just push me and push me and push me, sometimes just to get a rise out of me, because he was probably just enjoying
trolling
it.
Trolling you.
Exactly. And I was too naive to see it. But ultimately, he would say things and do things. And even at a young age, I can remember him getting me a copy of the Quran at some point. And I had Christians at my church when I was a youth pastor. They were like, why do you have a copy of that? And I was like, am I going to light on fire if I read it? Like, I was genuinely like, am I going to convert to Islam because I read it? Or perhaps I can read it, understand their point of view, can connect with them in a different way, can actually have an intelligent conversation rather than just regurgitate some talking points you've heard. And nobody liked that answer. But if you're, and you and I've talked about this, if you keep your kids in a bubble, as soon as they get outside that bubble, they run.
Yep.
And so my dad did a great job. My parents did a great job of allowing me, with their safety net nearby, but allowing me to explore and to ask questions. And no topic was ever off limits. And if I started to think that there was something off limits, or I had resolved myself, my dad would make sure to make me insanely uncomfortable about the position I just took, and to push me so that I was sure. He'd be like, I want to make sure that you want to plant your feet on that. You better be sure you can take all the criticisms that come with it, because there's a hole here and there's a hole here. and there's a hole here. And he taught Sunday school and he taught apologetics and he taught that stuff. And so he would push on those things. And then I would have to come to some conclusions, go, I believe that there's a hole here, but I'm comfortable with that hole.
And so here's that what our recommendation then. If you want to start discovering objective truth in yourself.
Oh, look at us coming back around, Joe.
Pick a book that you just disagree with every fabric. Go read Mein Kampf or read the, you know.
I have a copy of it if you would like a copy of it.
And in my playlist, you'd probably judge me by some of the stuff that I read, and I get something out of everything I disagree with.
Plato, Aristotle, all those guys. You know, if you come into my office, there are a whole slew of books on my bookshelf, and I've read chunks of most of them. Some of them, no. Some of them I inherited. Some of them, you know, but each one of them has something to offer, and there's a nugget of truth in there. And if I'm willing to open my eyes enough to chew the meat and spit out the bones, there's some stuff I can learn in there. And in some cases, you know, some of those books, yeah, they've been horrible. You know, you think of what Mein Kampf or, you know, you can pick, you know, something from Mao or you know, but there's stuff in there that you go, oh, I didn't realize how they got from A to B to C, but now looking at that, I totally understand why Germany went the way they did and in the context and all that stuff. It doesn't make it right, but now that I understand it, I don't have to repeat it. Now that I understand it, I know the ploys. Now when the media says X, Y, and Z and they call this person Hitler and that person Hitler, I go, no, no, no. Like that's a cute characterization you're trying to get for retweets, but this is actually what happened. And when we position ourselves, it allows us to get to the truth, but most people want to live in an echo chamber. Or Christians, Republicans, Democrats, doesn't matter. Atheists, you know, they're only going to read, you know, Richard Dawkins. But yeah, I have a book by Richard Dawkins, not because I agree with anything virtually that he says. But at the end of the day, there just might be a nugget or two in there that will let me connect with somebody that holds that view or something that's there to teach me.
All right, so let me put the period on this because this was amazing. So the dark spots that you can't see, maybe, right, being able to read stuff that's not true and stop choking on it so much. Yep. Maybe that's what we need to get better at.
Absolutely.
This is a heavy show.
This was good.
Yeah.
But we have to do that. If we really want to be people who are after truth and we want to, you know, have our center based on that, we can't exclude. Well, I don't agree with their philosophy, so I'm not going to read any of their books. I can remember in Bible college, there were certain pastors and theologians and stuff like that that were like so far to like out there with their thoughts. But like there's one gentleman, Rob Bell, that is considered anathema in a lot of evangelical circles and conservative circles. I think he's Oprah's spiritual advisor or whatever. And there are several positions he takes that I adamantly like. I find to be completely off basis. He's a brilliant writer, and I have every one of his books, and I've read all of them, and guess what? I didn't get swept off into hell. I didn't get zapped by lightning. But man, he made me ask some questions about my positions.
Yeah, that's exactly
because he challenged some of those.
Here's
things.
This theme.
Go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
So this theme is that in order to create more objective truth, you have to be more accepting of hearing things that aren't true. If you want right? So the theme about if you want to have more finances, you have to get better at dealing with the lack of finances. Yep. This theme is going to sew through everything we talk about. Get used to it because it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah. No. Oh,
man, this is my favorite show ever.
No, it's so good. And I hope for people that are watching, you understand that at some level, Joe and I both believe that there is some sort of objective truth. I just don't think it exists in my echo chamber. I think it exists outside of every philosophy, outside of all that. There's a truth. And then all the other stuff is looking at it from these various angles. And when we rule out a whole set because, well, that person believed this or they had this, maybe we're missing a piece of the puzzle. And maybe we're not seeing things totally clearly. You know, I certainly have my theology and philosophy and some of those unshakable foundation pieces in my life. But like you said, you can cover them with mud, but eventually they shake themselves out.
Yeah, you just think like those philosophies are stronger than we think. They're not delicate. So you grab that sledgehammer and hit it, everything falls off except for it. And if you keep that in your mind, you know, all you got to do is hit a little bit of criticism at it. And guess what happens? That weak stuff falls off.
One of my favorite encouragements I give to people who are struggling with their relationship with God or, you know, they feel like God's angry with them or whatever. It's So I'm like, his shoulders are broad enough. He can handle he can handle your criticism. You know, when I look at some of the Psalms and David's like, you know, God, why have you forgotten me? You might as well just kill me. Like, you know, the way that he writes in there is so raw and authentic. And so, like, for me, like, when I talk to God, like, I just want to be myself. And so many people think, like, oh, well, God's pissed off at me. He's not listening to me. He's not whatever. And so they go through a whole layer after layer of bad religious teaching, thought, church, whatever. And I'm just going, you know, he's actually totally strong and able to handle, like, he went to, in my opinion, you know, he went to the cross for you, like he died for you. I think he can handle your criticism. I think he can handle you being a little upset at him or thinking you're forgotten. And I go back and I read those Psalms and I read those other things. He's not that delicate, you know, he's able to withstand whatever.
And what I love most, he's like that parent, that stern parent who just would rather sit there quietly and let it play out. Right. I picture that all the time.
Shake out. Yeah, of course. He's like, all right, you done?
Exactly.
No, it's so good. Well, we hope you enjoyed the show. We hope you go find something that to read that you wouldn't normally read. Go find a person that you wouldn't normally have a conversation with, have that conversation, and do it to listen, not to be right.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.